29. All good. Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting. My name is Paula Reid, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's meeting on Monday the 15th of December 2025. Welcome to everyone in the public gallery and also a warm welcome to everyone who may be watching along at home. If you are with us tonight, could you please ensure that your mobile phones are switched off or onto silent, please. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under these I'm required to advise you that A, an audio or audio-visual recording is being made of the meeting, and B, all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and C, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I'll now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, the Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, our Communications Officer, Mr Stewart, Mr Heber, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from our Director of Engineering Services, Mr Mackey. Before we begin tonight's meeting, I wanted to take the opportunity to make a couple of statements. I wanted to acknowledge the heartbreaking events that occurred yesterday at Bondi Beach. Like others today across the country, Kingborough Council's flags have flown at half-mast today as a mark of respect and one of great sorrow. The loss of life and the harm caused have shocked and saddened people right across Australia. I know from talking to people in the community today that many right here in Kingston are feeling unsettled and affected by this tragedy. And that is not uncommon when something like this senseless event occurs, especially of this magnitude. Our hearts go out to the victims and their loved ones, those that were injured, and to the families, the friends, and loved ones whose lives have been forever changed. Any number of words to acknowledge the hurt and suffering right now seems inadequate. But on behalf of Kingborough Council, we convey our deepest sympathies. We also would like to acknowledge the courage, the compassion, and the professionalism of the first responders and health workers, but also the members of the public who stepped forward to help others during such danger. These acts of bravery are incredible. At times like this, we are reminded of the importance of calm, of care for one another, and of community strength. We need to come together to move forward. And on behalf of Kingborough Council, I extend our condolences and support to all of those affected. I would also like tonight, before we go into the agenda, to pay tribute to a remarkable member of our local community, Mr. David Vickery. Until recently, David had been a member of Council's Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee for more than two decades. And it was with great sorrow that I note that David's passing over the weekend. David was a tireless contributor to the Kingborough community from the time he arrived from the UK in 1979 with his wife and two young children. Over the following 46 years, he dedicated himself to making a positive and a lasting difference to those around him, whether by fostering meaningful social connections, advocating for improved conditions in education, or championing disability access and inclusion. Among David's many contributions to community life were his involvement in creating amateur theatre productions in Kingston and his active participation in the school associations of his children's schools, Kingston Primary and Kingston High School. In the early 1980s, he was instrumental in securing an above-ground swimming pool at Kingston Primary School to enable Learn to Swim programs at a time when no other suitable pool existed in the area. He also led peaceful protests in the late 1980s against cuts to education funding. And in recognition of his dedication, David was awarded life membership of the Kingston High School Association in 2011. A long-time advocate and activist for disability access, David joined Council's Access Advisory Committee nearly two decades ago. He had lived experience of living with a disability. I had the honour of meeting David when I became chair of the committee around 14 years ago, and I greatly valued his wise counsel and willingness to share his own lived experiences. He was always among the first to contribute to submissions, reports and community information materials, and he lobbied tirelessly for improved access for mobility devices across footpaths, crossings and public facilities right throughout Kingborough. David also became the face of the committee's campaign to improve the availability and reliability of wheelchair accessible taxis in Tasmania, an issue that frustratingly still remains unresolved despite David's best efforts. In January 2021, David was awarded the highest honour Council can bestow when he was named Kingborough Citizen of the Year. That presentation remains vividly in my mind, not only for the emotion David showed, but for the humility with which he accepted the award, and I think we can all agree that there was no more deserving recipient than David. David was a true English gentleman. He was generous with his time, he was passionate in his advocacy, and he was deeply committed to the well-being of people with disabilities and the broader community. He was a wonderful storyteller and he had a great sense of humour, and he will be very, very sorely missed. On behalf of Kingborough Council and particularly David's friends and colleagues on the Disability Access, Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, we extend our deepest sympathies to David's wife Jenny, their two children and his extended family and friends. His loss will be felt profoundly, but we hope that they take some comfort in knowing that David leaves behind a remarkable legacy in his beloved adopted home here in Kingborough. That now takes us to page one of the agenda, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 21 held on the 1st of December 2025 be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page two, item five, workshops to be held since the last Council meeting. On the 8th of December, we had a workshop in relation to Taswater, and the second part of the workshop was in relation to the draft LPS. Still on the same page, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No, thank you. Still on page two, item seven, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Item eight, questions without notice in the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? If you do, please come to the lectern. Thank you. I know you know the drill.
I do now.
Thank you very much.
It doesn't make it any less nerve-wracking.
That's okay.
Tamika from Oyster Cove.
Thank you, Tamika.
Tamika Adkins.
Yeah. Sorry.
While Kimber Council's appointment of Irene Inc. Planning meets the minimum definition of a consultant's review, engage an external firm to provide analysis, it falls short of best practice standards. The lack of disclosure about the individual consultants and the apparent omission of prior public commentary from independents checks has undermined community confidence in the impartiality of the review. My question is, how does Kingborough Council define independence in the context of consultant reviews?
CEO.
Thanks for the question. I don't necessarily agree with the statement in the preamble, but in terms of responding to the question, the independence here is people from outside of the organisation, people that have no vested interest in the organisation, and people with a suitably qualified and suitably experienced to be able to undertake the review. In terms of the procurement we did around it, we went to the market and engaged with as many consultants as we could in terms of understanding who was out there and who was interested and had relatively significant applications from them in terms of the tenders we received around the work to be undertaken. So I would, in my opinion, the reviews have got impartiality, independence, and will be thorough and robust in reviewing the zoning.
Next question. To ensure transparency and maintain community trust, can Kingborough Council demonstrate that the independence of the consultant was rigorously evaluated, including consideration of public statements that may affect perceptions of bias?
CEO.
So as part of the process to undertake the evaluation, we looked at potential or perceived conflicts of interest. So we considered them from previous work that had been done by different people tendering for the work, and that was considered as part of the evaluation of the tenders.
There's a question?
More, thank you. What measures are in place to ensure the consultant's findings are truly independent and not influenced by council officers' existing views, so the planning department staff existing views?
CEO.
So the review is underway, and the review of existing materials is an important part of that process to understand context of what's gone before, what's happened at hearings, what's happened through the exhibition period, the representations that were made by the community, so that's an important part of it. So there is times and places where the consultants will be engaging with council staff to be able to do that. There's also times and places where they'll be engaging with councillors. As you heard earlier in the agenda tonight, we had a workshop with councillors last Monday night where the thoughts and views of councillors were expressed, and the consultants were able to portray the process that they would undertake through to councillors as well. So this isn't just an executive function overseeing the consultants here. We also have councillors that are heavily engaged in this process to make sure that there's representatives of your community as councillors involved in the discussion with the consultants around the process that's being undertaken and the information that they're receiving from the councillors as part of that process. So there's multiple contact points and ways of engaging in oversight as part of the process. I will note that as part of the council resolution, their final report from them will also come back to the planning authority for approval before it goes to the TPC.
So the councillors here are representing the community. Is that what you're saying?
Are there any further questions?
Peter Creeve, Allens Review Lad.
Good evening.
Independence in such reviews is not just about being external. It's about being free from conflicts of interest and being seen as impartial by the community. Did Irene Inc. declare any conflicts of interest before being appointed?
The CEO.
So, as part of the procurement process, we, as I've mentioned in the previous answer, we received, information on conflicts of interest from all the parties that put in tenders. So work that they had done, who they've represented, those types of things. So yes, they did.
Were reputational risks, such as prior public commentary, included in the probity assessment?
C. CEO.
Reputational risk isn't a direct criteria that's used in the evaluation of the tenders. We looked at a number of criteria which relate to the skills and experience to undertake the role, obviously the conflicts of interest that we talked about earlier. We talked about other price attribute, non-price attributes as well as pricing involved in the assessment of the tenders that came through.
Right. So then how has council ensured not just in this circumstance, but how does council ensure that all consultants are free from both actual and perceived conflicts of interest?
CEO.
So appropriate oversight is one way that we maintain that. That's not influencing the work or the outcome, but it's about looking at the process that's being undertaken and making sure that it is free from bias, that it's evidence-based and working towards achieving, an evidence-based outcome. So there's multiple ways that we do that. The key way is obviously the contract management and oversight through that, and the accountability for that comes back to me. But additionally, like I mentioned earlier, there's workshops scheduled with councillors around this and the final report to come back to council as well. So there's multiple engagement points to make sure that the process is as transparent and accountable as possible in achieving a good outcome.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Please come forward. Catherine Anderson from Blackmans Bay. This is the topic's transparency, and the statement is, Council has appointed Irene Inc. Planning as the independent consultant to review the application for the LCZ, Landscape Conservative Zone. My first question is, will Council publish the consultant's methodology for assessing LCZ mapping?
Ms. Shakuti. Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. Yes, I anticipate we will, and that will be included as part of the final report that is then put to councillors as the planning authority with the methodology and recommendations from the review.
My second question is, will the consultant's draft findings be made available for public comment before finalisation?
Ms. Shakuti. Through you, Mayor. We haven't actually turned our mind to that, so we'll have to consider that and take it on notice.
My final question, will Council publish the budget allocated for or paid in full on completion of the appointed individual consultant's work of the review?
Ms. Shakuti. Through you, Mayor. I imagine so, through our reporting, our budget reporting that we're obliged to do.
Any further questions, please come forward.
Mark Donnellan from Huntingfield. Three questions. First, I just want to acknowledge that I understand that managing lost property can be complex and doesn't come without costs. The question, when council staff find lost property like a jacket, phone, watch or a pram at Kingston Park and the Kingborough Community Hub, what happens to it? And is there a policy that defines what should be done?
Mr. Smee, could you assist us with that one?
There's certainly no policy on the matter, but I'd need to take it on notice in relation to what our various staff that may find such items do with them.
Kingston Beach has a lost property tree. How did its existence come about, and can anyone speak to its usefulness?
So I understand that the lost property tree was a community-based initiative, and it seems to have been working very well, because when people find something at the beach, they put it on the tree, and then generally they follow up by posting on social media about it. And quite often I know that someone has gone down and claimed it, and there's been happy reunions and pictures of lost toys in particular. So that seems to be working very well and is a great example of a community initiative that is just benefiting those who are beachgoers.
Different topic.
I thought you were going to say a third question. Can we have one at Kingston Park?
I'll work on that.
Okay.
Oh, there it is. Sorry. As part of the Kingston Beach local area traffic management upgrades, the council has installed wavy blue art on the road surface, which is intended to improve safety for pedestrians by slowing down and increasing the attentiveness of drivers. The blue material appears to be affixed to the road much the same way as my daughter might paint with glue and glitter. In much the same way, an amount of the blue material at this stage comes loose on the road surface. What is this blue material, and is it something we're okay with entering our waterways?
We don't have our Director of Engineering Services with us here this evening. We might need to take that on notice. Unfortunately, he's away unwell, so we're not going to hazard a guess. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Nick Booth from Longley. Recent bushfires on the East Coast have highlighted that councils are possibly open, or potentially open for litigation. The Glenmorgan Spring Bay Council has acknowledged potential liability exposure that is a key consideration regarding action or inaction in a recent major bushfire event, and potentially ignored fire mitigation efforts that were recommended in a report it orchestrated. Does the council believe they would not face the same potential litigation if a catastrophic bushfire was to happen in this municipality?
I haven't seen the comments by Glenmorgan Spring Bay, so I can't speak to them, but I'll ask our CEO or Ms Shaguti to address that.
Through you, Mayor. So council responsibility for bushfire, so statewide bushfire management sits under the state government, so the TFS, along with Forestry TAS and Parks and Wildlife. We sit underneath that framework, and our bushfire mitigation works align with the overall direction and mitigation actions determined at that level. In terms of our own land, yes, we do have a responsibility to ensure our land is managed properly and is managing bushfire risk that may arise from it, and then any other infrastructure that we own that is required for fire management should be maintained as well. So if we're doing that in accordance with our currently approved plans, then we would be, I would like to think, deemed as executing our duty in relation to bushfire mitigation.
Second question, given that the key section of stylus, section 8, which provides regional policies for managing risks and hazards, and the majority of the policies are pertaining to bushfire hazards that relate to ensuring that planning schemes provide suitable requirements for vegetation removal are considered. So my question is this: will the council consider increasing its bare minimum of hazard management areas, or HMAs, that allow landholders to clear to a maximum rather than the current minimum that are presently required in DAs, or most DAs, in bushfire-prone areas, as higher bowels require an expensive construction costs to increase the bow rating? This would lower construction costs, increase housing affordability, and place the safety of the community as its priority, allowing for a more resilient bushfire rural community, better able to withstand fires that are without doubt going to increase in ferocity in the future.
Ms Shaguti.
Through you, Mayor. I hope I've understood your question and that this answer addresses it for you. So in terms of assessing applications in bushfire-prone areas, the applicant will submit a report from a suitably qualified bushfire practitioner that will recommend the hazard management area required for the particular development, and that is what then informs our assessment for that area.
My third question is kind of following on from that. Given that most of these practitioners usually recommend a fairly high bow so that they know that they can get it through a council, you know, it's catch 22. If you recommend a higher bow rating, you're generally going to get knocked back, is the consensus from a lot of them. So quite often I'll recommend a very high bow rating to make sure it goes through a council, because there is a perceived from most of the practitioners that if you go higher, you're not going to get it approved. So you're going to go, you can make it a lot higher. You actually get it through.
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. I'm going to interpret the question as,
When you talk to the practitioners that that recommend clearing, they generally recommend a higher bow rating so that it will actually get through council, rather than actually a lower bow rating that won't get through council.
Right. I'm unaware of whether that is something that is happening. What we rely on is suitably qualified bushfire practitioners submitting reports recommending what the hazard management area should be.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions, please come forward.
Natalie Kingston, Blackmans Bay. My questions relate to community engagement with the consultants. Question one, will Irene Inc. engage directly with the affected landowners during the review?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. We have commissioned this work to quite tight timeframes, and unfortunately there's also the intervening Christmas and holiday break. We haven't planned for direct consultation with landowners, given the logistics and time to do this. What we can say though is all of the evidence presented at the hearings to date, as well as all of the representations, and our consultant engaging with our councillors who have done a very good job of articulating the concerns, and they will be engaging with councillors through the process as well to hear the views of the community. In terms of landowners, the review will be looking at all of LCZ, so there shouldn't, I suppose, for the proposed LCZ properties, all properties will be considered.
So if after the review process there is a recommendation for a different zoning, will there then be landowners, the opportunity for landowners to have another say or a say at all? What would that process be?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. So the report will come to council for approval and then submitted to the commission, who will be the final decision maker in considering those, and will consider those recommendations on their merits. If the commission determines outcomes that differ than what is currently proposed in the Section 35F report and draft LPS, the commission will then make a decision around what further consultation will be required, and that could take various forms.
And my Last question is, will Irene Inc. provide feedback to individual property owners, which I think you've pretty much answered, which would be a no, so I might change that to, how would individual property owners seek feedback? Would that be through the TPC?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, it will be via the hearings themselves, and then the Commission, if there's proposed changes to the draft mapping, they will determine what consultation is then required. I can't imagine that no consultation will... That's not a likely outcome for owners whose properties may be changed and are affected.
Any further questions, please come forward.
Hello, I'm Donna Finnegan from Margate, and my questions are about outcomes and accountability. My questions relate to the possible outcomes and accountability relating to the independent review. What mechanisms exist to identify any independent oversight of Irene Inc.'s work beyond the council itself?
The CEO.
So it's important to note that there, as have been described earlier in the questions, that there's multiple layers of oversight as part of the as part of this process. There's the director, there's myself, there's the councillors that are all involved in this process and will have degrees of oversight through the process. Beyond that, the report is then submitted to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. Now, the Planning Commission is, again, an independent agency established to test the veracity of the process and the validity of the application of zones, and it's done through the public hearing process. It's done through, you know, that we're in the midst of. So there's multiple layers of checks and balances associated with this, and the independent review is another one that we've included into this process.
How will council respond if Irene Inc.'s findings contradict the council officer's recommendations?
CEO.
Through this process, we've been very open about the fact that we enter into this process in good faith to get external input. So there wouldn't be staff intervention in the outputs of that. That information that it would then be is approved through the planning authority would then be submitted to the TPC.
And will the council commit to adopting Irene Inc. recommendations, or are they advisory only?
CEO.
It's important to note that the council isn't wouldn't be adopting the recommendations. They are something that the council would endorse to be supplied to the TPC. The output of that is still subject to the process through the TPC. So there's still decision-making beyond whatever the consultant report says in terms of a final outcome. So just because it's written in the consultant report doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the final outcome is, because there's still that independent process with the commission that still is to play out. So the council will have a role in endorsing that as materials to be submitted through council to the TPC, but that's not the same as adopting a final outcome.
Well, I've got it clear. Whatever the outcome is that's recommended, the council is going to use that to provide their evidence to the Planning Commission on based on the report from Irene Inc.
CEO.
Once the council, as the planning authority, has endorsed the report, it would be then submitted through to the TPC unaltered from that point.
Do you mind? Sorry, that's the bit I'm struggling with.
Sorry.
Sorry, can you say that again? Just so I can
hear. So, whatever the recommendations are from the Irene Inc., the planning authority in the council will endorse those recommendations and then it goes to the planning commission. Is that, have I got the steps right?
Yeah, so I can't speak
for the planning authority. That's the councillors around this table that sit in that seat as to what their response to that will be. Once it is endorsed by the planning authority, it will go to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. But I would suggest that the councillors acting as the planning authority won't just be rubber stamping something that comes through. They'll be interrogating it with the consultant to make sure that they've tested for validity, they've tested for the process that's been undertaken, they've tested for that independence that's been asked about to make sure that it's robust and rigorous. And at that point, I would suggest they would likely endorse it to go through to the TPC.
Any further questions, please come forward.
Vince Taskunas, Tinderbox. Thanks for those answers. Just to start with, you mentioned earlier about a number of firms that were considered. Could you please tell us how many firms were considered in terms of the process for the selection of the consultant, and can the list of those be tabled tonight?
CEO.
I can't tell you off the top of my head how many people we went out to. I can tell you that we had three responses to our request for tender. But I can take the question of how many firms we contacted on notice.
Great. Just before, you were talking about the endorsement by the planning authority for the outputs of the work. Did you have a specific time frame for that, through you, Mayor? Because you were talking about, you know, a process, the answer earlier about over Christmas, New Year, etc. I was just wondering, have we got a specific time frame for that?
I don't believe we've got it as yet, CEO.
So when the council first passed the motion and the commission, the Planning Commission, had also issued the Direction 69, we indicated an indicative time frame of being able to respond by the end of January 2026 for that work. The intent there being that we needed time to procure resource to be able to do the review, at the same time acknowledging the desire from everyone to sort of move through the process. The intent is there or thereabouts that the review would be completed around that. In saying that, there's multiple steps that we need to go through, both in terms of the consultants being able to undertake the work, but also to be able to workshop it appropriately with council. We've already had a first workshop on it. And then ultimately for it to come to a meeting for adoption by the planning authority before it goes through into the commission. So there's multiple steps there. So I can't say exactly when it'll be finally submitted to the commission, but I think I've provided you an indicative time frame.
Thanks for that. Not particularly specific, but thank you for that indication. That's good. That's good. Mayor, in relation to the review itself of our properties to landscape conservation zone, given the fact that the draft rezoning resulted in significantly more titles zoned as LCZ than any other municipality, can you confirm tonight that one option of the review is that fewer titles will end up being recommended as LCZ?
Well, that is a possibility, of course, but that is entirely up to the assessment of the independent consultants that we've engaged to go through this process. But, you know, that is a possibility, of course. I can't predict. I'm not going to preempt what outcome they are going to come up with. I don't think anybody in this room could possibly do that, but that is certainly one option that would be on the table.
That'll be the decision of the planning authority or the consultant?
As we've already heard this evening, then they will be making recommendations, and then the planning authority, which is all of us 10 councillors collectively, will consider the advice that we receive from them and vote on it accordingly, and then it would go to the TPC for the final say.
And the appointment of the consultant, was that signed off by council or by staff?
It was signed off by council on the recommendation of staff.
Right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Please come forward.
Richard Woolley from Lower Snug. I'm struggling to understand why this process is continuing the way that it is, given that there's a massive pushback from the community and the affected landowners and ratepayers, and there's also been suggestions from the Planning Commission during the hearings that a simple fix would be to simply change the affected properties to rural zoning in one of the three or so variations. So, one, why hasn't this planning authority gone along with the recommendations or the hints, if you like, from the Planning Commission, and what is the motivation behind continuing with this process?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, we are following the direction of the Planning Commission, which was Direction 69, for us to undertake a review of the proposed LCZ properties, which is what has been commissioned. We are following the applicable process in terms of determining reviewing how that applies, which is the different guidelines around applying zones under a draft LPS, as well as relevant policies and strategies. So, for example, Stralis, the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy, and considering all the evidence and representations presented at the hearings to date. So we are following the process that we are bound to follow.
Second question then would be, is this planning authority capable or allowed to simply override the whole process and say, the community doesn't want this process, why don't we just, as suggested by the Planning Commission, make it all rural?
I think you might be misinterpreting the words of the Planning Commission in saying change all the proposed LCZ to rural living. That's not the direction that they have provided us with. So let's not misinterpret their words in framing a question, please, because that would be very disingenuous. As Ms. Shakuti has already indicated, we're following the advice that they provided in Direction 69. They haven't directed us to change everything to rural living, and as I've previously indicated in answer to other questions in this forum, there are people who don't want to be, who are currently touted for LCZ, who have indicated and have written in and said, well, we don't want to be made to rural living, so we would be
not many,
upset.
Though, is there? So
no, there aren't that many, but there are those who feel very strongly that they don't want to. So it would be very, very difficult for us to override the process, and the process is that in determining what zoning is applied in certain areas, there are a whole lot of considerations of state planning policies that have to be taken into regard, as well as has been indicated, the Stralis, amongst others. So there is a process here. It's not as simple. I know that in Utopia there is a view that we could just go, okay, no LCZ, make it all rural living.
That was the question. Do you have that authority to do that?
We do not, because it would not be in line with the process that and the procedures and the guidelines that the TPC ask us to follow, and that is to take into consideration all of the different state policies and things like state coastal policy, different agricultural policies. There's a really long list of things that need to be looked at and assessed against for the zoning of each of these properties. So a blanket rezoning from anything that's proposed to LCZ to rural living would not satisfy the TPC according to the process that they have put forward for everybody else, for all councils.
So wouldn't that just be a simple, every landowner and ratepayer affected could say yes or no to LCZ? Those that want it, fair enough, off you go, and those that don't can go to rural.
Unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure I read that was what was suggested by the Planning Commission in some of the hearings.
I don't believe that that's what the Planning Commission have indicated, but Ms Shakuti, you might like to address that one.
Through you, Mayor. The application of zones for properties, so the representation and submissions and wishes of the property owner is one consideration, alongside the other considerations that we've just described. So I don't believe that has been a suggestion from the Planning Commission, and their expectation is that we follow the process and the framework that is set out and then submit the evidence before the hearings, in which they will consider all of those things as well in determining how zones apply.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward. Kim Phillips, Margate. How do I start this? So at the public meeting that was held in Margate way back when, there was an agreement that there would be a motion for councillors and as the planning authority to review. We understand that there was a workshop held later where the decision was then made to change that motion to the engagement of a consultant. And then at some time after that, the decision was then made to engage multiple consultants due to the timeframes. We understand that. I sent an email about a week ago requesting a copy of the circular that went around while that decision was made. We've been led to believe that that decision was made via a circular. Can that circular be made public, please, so that we can see the conversation that occurred?
Sorry, I'm unsure what circular you're referring to.
I don't know either. Obviously, I'm not in council. So what we would like to understand is the discussion and the information that contributed to the decision to engage multiple consultants rather than a single consultant.
CEO.
So what I've just heard is the question is the materials that went into selecting multiple consultants rather than a single consultant. That recommendation was made by the tender panel that was looking at and evaluating the tenders that came through, and then the final recommendation that went to councillors then recommended a split between two consultants based on like we've said earlier in the evening, based on timing to be able to achieve the outcome. So is that what you're referring to?
That's what I'm referring to, yes.
That'd be available through RDI.
Normally, a tender is considered closed.
Yeah. Typically, tenders are commercial in confidence and are then therefore considered in closed session of council. So I'd suggest that's a confidential document and would not be disclosed under RTI.
Council in a closed meeting, and the decision was made to engage multiple consultants rather than a single consultant. Is that what I'm being told?
Just to clarify.
Because that's clarify my question.
Yep. Yeah, can I clarify? Yep. It was not considered at a council meeting due to timing. It was sent around via email because there wasn't a.
Can we see that email?
What I'm saying is because it's commercial in confidence, it wouldn't be disclosable under RTI because of the commercial nature of the information within that. That could be tested, but that would be my position at the moment.
Are there any further questions? Please come forward. No, thank you very much for your questions. We'll continue on with the agenda. We have questions on notice from the public on page 2. We had one in relation to aged care assistance from Ms Ford with a response from Ms Shakuti. Request for further information from Ms Atkins and response from Ms Shakuti. Question from Mr Biggins in relation to cool burning and a response from Ms Denexter. Question from Professor Rowan with a response from Delise Shakuti in relation to LCZ. Question in relation to cultural cool burns from Professor Rowan and a response from Nikki Denexter. And a question from Mr Booth in relation to planning responses and timeframes and an officer's response from Ms Shakuti. Takes us to page 7, item 10, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question? No, thank you. Moves us on to questions on notice and councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice and councillors. Page 8, item 12, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition curbside collection Leslie Vale will be provided to a future council meeting. And item 13, petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Takes us to page 9, item 14.1, motions received at Council's annual general meeting with a recommendation on page 11, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Our only agenda item here, or one of two, is to discuss the 10 motions put forward by members of the community at our Council AGM held on the 6th of December, which was very well attended. And basically this report sets out the logic and time frame for council to appropriately respond to those 10 motions, because they have to be based on evidence response from council staff, and they need time to do that, and it has to be considered by the council in upcoming meetings. So I don't have anything further to add to that.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No, I will put the motion then. It's moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to item 14.2, appendices, looking for a recommendation, with a recommendation on page 12. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved to Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Bain. Any discussion? Anyone else? No. Thank you. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 12, item 15, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Item 16 is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Looking for a mover and a seconder, and the motion is that in accordance with Regulation 17 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, by Council by absolute majority moved into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, tender assessment AB2529, Campbell Street stormwater upgrade and rates recovery section 137. Mover and a seconder, please. Moved Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright and seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried unanimously. So that does mean that that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. I'd like to thank everyone for their attendance tonight. Thank you all for engaging with us throughout the year, and particularly in the last few months where I know that there have been challenges. But I thank you all for the respectful manner in which you've engaged with us, and I know you will continue to do that in the new year. Can I wish you all a very happy and safe time over the festive season. As I said at our AGM, I know that Christmas means different things to different people, but I do hope that you get to spend it with those people that are nearest and dearest to you, and recognising that period of perhaps a bit of downtime and some reflection in the manner in which makes you all very happy. So thank you very much for your contributions to the community this year. And while we do still have the open session going. I'd like to acknowledge my fellow councillors for their hard work throughout 2025 and the contributions that that they make. It's not easy being a councillor. Many of the councillors here have other jobs that they fulfil. At times it can be a juggling act, but at times we ask more of them than I think we should, but we need to do that in order to fit in a lot of the workshops that we need. And I know that 2026 is going to be a particularly busy one for us, so I thank you all for, and particularly for the spirited debate that is constantly around this table, because I think in the spirit of the Lift the Tone campaign from the Local Government Association, we were talking in that campaign about wanting to highlight the fact that we can disagree passionately on a subject, but we can do so in a respectful way. And I believe that the councillors who sit around this table are able to demonstrate that week after week. And we don't see ourselves in the headlines because of any streaming matches or anything like that. So I really do thank you all for your contributions. And I thank our staff for the work that they do throughout the year. It's a thankless task, I think, being a staff member. They are here to give us fair and frank advice, and they do that week after week. They're here much, much later during the week than we ever are, and they work exceptionally hard, and they do deserve a good break over the festive season as well. So I thank you all and hope you all get to spend time with your families. So thank you all. In accordance with Council Meetings and Councillor Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease at 6:25 p.m. Closed session of Council adjourns. To those who have been watching along at home,